Tune in to hear the latest and greatest in the world of finance, business, and the economy with On the Money's Hot Off the Press.
Welcome to Hot Off the Press, where we introduce to you the latest and greatest in finance, business, and economics, events, literature, and new media. Today I'm at Sydney Writers Festival with Jeff Sparrow, and we're talking about his book Trigger Warnings and the economic implications of censorship.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. First, if you could please introduce your book and kind of explain the title a little bit.
This book, Trigger Warnings, was a project that was commissioned in the wake of the 2016 election, the victory of Donald Trump, which led lots of people to kind of wonder what was happening in international politics. How was it that this guy who was a billionaire real estate developer who was notorious for sort of conspicuous consumption, who rode to his office each day in a golden elevator, could somehow present himself as a scourge of the elites and champion of the everyman. The focus on political correctness came about, well, partly because campaigning against political correctness was a kind of key facet of the Trump campaign, but also similar campaigns in Britain and Australia, but also for me it was a way into some of the themes of the culture war more generally, I guess.
And I wanted to discuss a little bit more specifically this disconnect that there appears to be between political and economic issues in politics, because in contemporary politics, these issues are conflated in a way. Neoliberalism has a tendency to do that. So could you please speak a little bit to that?
Yes, that's a really good question and a really interesting one. I guess one of the arguments that I try to make in the book is that the way that we think about issues of gender and race and sexuality has been very much shaped by the great social movements of the 60s and the early 70s. But I try to argue that these movements have changed substantially over time. And I stress that in their early incarnations, all of these movements were focused on something that I call direct politics, in that they were based very much on grassroots movements around ideas of participatory democracy and an idea that the various kinds of oppression were manifested in the structures of society, including the economy, so that if you were fighting for liberation, whether that was women's liberation or national liberation or black liberation or gay liberation, then that fight was connected to a project where society as a whole would have to be radically reshaped. In the early movements, there was very much an attempt to connect the political, the social, and the economic. And I think that, as you suggest with that question, over the course of the 80s and the 90s in particular, that connection broke down as increasingly the mainstream left came to accept that the way the economy was organized was the only way the economy could be organized. And so economic questions became increasingly off limits to the left. We can no longer argue around economics or structural questions more broadly. Instead, we can fight around these superstructural issues to do with culture and so on.
In the book, you write about how the right has conflated, in a way, the ability of minorities to express themselves through free speech with oppression and censorship of, for example, hate speech. And this also seems to have a kind of economic element to it, because as you say, the left can no longer speak about structural issues.
Yeah, so again, it's a good question. You've touched on a whole lot of very knotty issues. I mean, I start the book by talking about one of the many sort of anti-PC tracks that you can find on Amazon, actually by an Australian guy who's gone over to the US. What's it called? Something like Retaking America, Smashing Political Correctness. And it puts forward this idea that political correctness in the US is the greatest attack on liberty that Americans have experienced in the last decades. And, you know, suggest in the book that, well, you know, this is a time in which American presidents have normalized, say, summary executions, through drone strikes. They've normalized torture, waterboarding. They've established Guantanamo Bay, where people are incarcerated indefinitely without charges or without. In that context, the suggestion that political correctness is the greatest form of censorship just seems to be delusional, but it partly does reflect exactly what you're talking about the way that the argument has shifted from structural change to these kind of superstructural elements. The ability that we have now to, you know, to read the books that we want or to see the films that we want is like quite demonstrably the result of these struggles against censorship that in Australia and America were led by the New Left, and that's been sort of totally written out of the history in a way.
Can we expand a little bit for anyone who's not familiar with superstructural issues, what you mean by those?
It's a Marxist distinction between an economic base and the kind of cultural forms that sit on top and rely upon that economic base. So by that I mean that in a context where it's been accepted that capitalism is eternal, that it is the only way that a society can be organized, then it becomes relegated to debating ideas about culture that in some ways are secondary to these economic determinants, if you see what I mean. Whereas once upon a time, the left would have seen the two as fundamentally connected. And I think that's an argument that in many ways has been lost.